You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
Hey there. Welcome to the first Instagram Live in a while. And when I started doing these Instagram Lives pretty much every day, almost a year ago, and then I would turn them into podcasts, part of the reason we were doing these was because there was so much misinformation in the news about the virus, so much misinformation in the news about the economy. Don't forget, media makes money by selling fear. They don't sell you news, they sell you fear. And we're happy as a population to pay for fear. Oh, the New York whatever costs $1.25 and I get a good healthy dose of fear? Count me in. Here's my $1.25. Sell me as much beer as possible. So we're doing these Instagram Lives and these podcasts and these Q&As every day because people reasonably had questions. Oh my gosh, this newspaper just said there's going to be 140 million deaths worldwide. What's going to happen? And it was all BS news. It was just to scare you. And I have had the benefit of having so many great scientists, epidemiologists, investors, economists, you know, presidential advisors, Federal Reserve people, you know, businessmen, sports figures on my podcast. I'm able to ask, is this true? Is this not true? Plus, we've had our own experiences. So, Robin, how's it feel to do the first Instagram Live since, I want to say, like, August?
You think it's been that long?
It's been that long. Yeah, we were doing that. It was hard work. It was really a lot of work because we do these because we love doing them. There's really no other reason. And people would send me emails every day saying how much they really benefited from them. And now, so what's happening now? Why do them now? Because you always have to ask this question, who are you, what are you, and why now? So why? I'll start with the why now. Right now, everything's in flux.
The coronavirus is like, I don't want to say it's stable, but there's a vaccine, there are new strains, there are more questions, but we're starting to learn that 140 million people are not going to die, and we're also starting to see the after effects of locking down the economy. A new stimulus bill was just passed. And here's what I'm noticing. Everybody is investing. Everybody from every end of the income spectrum is buying stocks right now. We just saw the GameStop AMC thing where a group of kids on Reddit pushed GameStop up from $3 a share to over $300 a share. And now it's up at 200 again. You know, that's up to, did you buy any GameStop during that?
No, only in the beginning.
In the beginning? Did you buy it at three and sell at 300 and you hid all the money for me in case of a divorce?
No.
What?
I did sell it.
So I want to kind of explain what happened there and what's happening in a couple other things. Robin is also an investor who I admire, but I have told her this in her face, is that she makes good decisions and she also makes bad decisions. I've been a professional investor. The why now is the world is changing economically and we're at the inning number one of that. And everybody's getting involved. Everybody, for the biggest since 1999, I'm seeing more retail investors in the market than ever before. Everybody, I'll take a taxi cab. The cab driver will say, what stocks do you like? I'll get a haircut. My barber will say, oh, what stocks should I buy? So I've never had this happen, even in 1999. It's more than 1999. I don't know why people ask me. They look at me and say, this guy looks freaky enough. He must be good at stocks or something. I don't know. Because a lot of like homeless people in the street will just stop me and say, hey, can you tell me what stocks to buy? I'm not even kidding about that. But Robin buys stocks, sells stocks. I usually don't keep track of what she's doing. When I do, she has a very particular style, but then I'll ask her some basic questions. And I realize there are some things she knows very well and other things she doesn't know at all. So I figured, given that so many people are interested and also scared about what's going on in the economy and the stock market. The stock market's gone down for a few days in a row now. What are some basic things you should know if you're getting involved in investing? And also, what are some basic things you should understand if you're worried about this economy right now? And because there's a lot, are we going to have inflation? Is what's going on with crypto? How many businesses are going out of business? Why is the stock market going up if businesses are going out of business? And also, by the way, I'll answer questions about anything. So ask any question you want. So Robin, first off, you're the basic retail investor and that's not an insult. That's a good thing. And you've done very well. And I'll comment on what I think of your style, but what is your basic approach to investing? What's an example? And then I'm going to freely tell you what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly. And you can pay attention to me or not. I've been a professional investor for 20 years, which means I'm just as useless as anyone else. We just saw the professionals got dismantled during this GameStop thing. So you don't have to listen to me, but I will have a different stance than Robin on this. And we'll also talk about the economy and the connection to the stock market and answer questions. So with that big intro, what's an example of stock you own and what's your style? Hi, Rosemary, who just stopped to visit us, who's also an investor.
Okay, so I only buy stocks that I believe in. So I like EVs, you know, electric vehicles.
EVs, I like how you're just casually like, oh, EVs. I'm gonna use the acronym. I drive an EV, a luxury EV. I would have bought a Tesla if you paid me. All right, go ahead.
And so I got in with CCIV very early because they took Lucid, but because I believed in, you know, the guy, what's his name?
Chamath.
Yeah.
So, okay.
No, it's not Chamath.
Oh, no, Michael Klein.
Michael Klein.
So, okay. Yeah. So CCIV is what's called a SPAC. I could describe that at some point, but hold on. So the purpose of a SPAC, it's called a special purpose acquisition company. That's not important. They basically go IPO, they go public on the stock exchange, and they have no business, but they have cash. So let's say they have $1 billion of cash.
It's a blank check.
They're a blank check company. Okay. Thank you, Rosemary. They're a blank check company. And what that means is they have cash and they can just write a blank check. So what they will do is they will buy a legit company, and the legit company will take over 95% of the SPAC, will change its name. So like Virgin Galactic went public through a SPAC. Virgin Galactic, started by Richard Branson, sends people into space. And by the way, you said you wanted to do space tourism. You would love to go into space. I'll go with you only because I love you. But if we're in space and the commander says, hey, I think we better investigate that distress signal, I'm going to create a big fucking scene if we decide to investigate that. That's the way people die in science fiction movies, is they investigate a random distress signal coming from that asteroid belt. I am not investigating it. We're just doing a little trip around the planet and coming back, if such a thing exists. But Virgin Galactic went public by merging into a SPAC, taking their money, changing the name of the SPAC to Virgin Galactic, and that's how many companies are going public. And by the way, there's something a little deeper going on here that's important to know. The reason this is getting so popular is because there's a war right now between Silicon Valley and Wall Street. Silicon Valley hates with a passion Wall Street. They think Wall Streeters are stupid and are just after fees, and they're correct. And Silicon Valley people in general are trying to innovate. They're trying to innovate. They claim it's not about the money, but let's not give them too much credit. They're pretty happy when they make $1 billion off of like some new text messaging app. But in general, they don't like how Wall Street takes such big fees and takes advantage of Silicon Valley. So SPACs are a way they get to take companies public on their own terms. So a good strategy with these SPACs, well, I'll go into strategies later, but you were involved in a SPAC. You invested in a SPAC, CCIV, Churchill Capital Number 4. And the rumors were they were buying a company called Lucid Motors, which is a valid competitor to Tesla, which is not easy to say. Tesla makes a great car. I wouldn't invest in the stock. It's too high and it's a little bit weird. But Lucid, what's the advantage of Lucid over Tesla? Like, why were you so excited about Lucid?
Actually, the battery is amazing. I think you can go, 577 miles with just one charge.
And what's the Tesla battery by comparison, roughly?
It doesn't, I don't know. I think it's like 300 or 400 and something.
300 or 400 miles? You'll have to talk loud with the sound in the background.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. But I do know that that's the best battery out there. Right now,
Lucid.
Lucid's battery. Yeah, and it is a battery company.
And why do you like electric vehicles? Like, do you see that everybody will eventually be driving an electric vehicle? Rosemary's nodding her head yes.
Yes,
do you think
it's the future?
Yeah, it is
the future. Why? Like, why not gas powered vehicles?
Well, I mean, it's just environmental reasons, and I think it's just better for the environment, really. So.
And also, it doesn't make any noise when it drives. Like, I find, like, driving an electric vehicle. By the way, I don't even have a driver's license. I am legally not allowed to drive in New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. I haven't yet found out about Florida. She wants me to get a license, but there's no way. 9 out of 10 drivers think they're above average drivers, which is impossible. Only 4 out of 10 can be above average. I am the 1 out of 10 who knows I am a below average driver. You will die if I am on the road. Someone out there will die if I am on the road with a car. So I'm not getting a license. But, so you like Lucid Motors.
Yes.
And there was a big rumor that CCIV, the SPAC, was going to buy Lucid Motors. And you looked at Tesla, which was like, what's the price of Tesla? Around 1,000?
No,
it's like six, almost seven. Yeah,
oh, no, I was making such a mistake. It's 600, not 1,000.
It got to 900.
Yeah. Got
to 900,
all right.
A weeks ago.
Yeah. A few weeks ago. It was, okay, so I was close, right? I don't follow. Here's the other key thing about the stock market is you shouldn't follow it every day. The point is to make money while you sleep, not reload all the time. But unless you're a day trader, which you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But so you like Lucid and you saw Tesla's at 600, 700, whatever it was.
Right.
And you figured, okay, well, if Lucid is going to be a competitor to Tesla, it also might get to 600. Was that part of your thinking?
Well, eventually it will. I mean, it's just they haven't put a car out yet, so I think they're going to start in the spring.
And so typically a SPAC is priced at $10. Originally CCIV was $10. But during this rumor craze, oh, will they buy Lucid? Will they not buy Lucid? It went all the way up to almost $60, right?
Yeah, 62 or something.
That's amazing. I don't think a SPAC in history has ever done that because they have $10 per share worth of cash and there's no business.
Right.
So they should always stay around 10. And so you did well with it. You sold some shares along the way up. And then you held some on the way down. It's back, but you're still fine. It's down to like 24, I think,
right.
which is pretty good. They did, in fact, announce the merger with Lucid.
Right.
So surprisingly, this is very unusual on Wall Street, is that the rumors were correct, which means there was some inside information that got around that somehow nobody is prosecuting, and it's fine. But here's the thing: there's an important saying on Wall Street: buy the rumor, sell the news. And so while the rumors were happening, more and more people were hearing the rumors. So here's what actually happens when it's why does buy the rumor, sell the news work? And this is an important Wall Street / investing lesson. While the rumors are happening, more and more people are hearing about the stock for the very first time. Maybe nobody ever heard of Lucid, or maybe nobody ever heard of CCIV, but their neighbor calls, hey, did you hear the rumor? CCIV might buy this Lucid Motors, which could be a competitor to Tesla. So more people hear about it. During the rumor phase, more people buy it. But then by the time the news comes out, everybody is already in it who's possibly going to be interested in this. So there's no new people to buy the stock once the news comes out. So that's why buy the rumor, sell the news works. Like right when the news happens, even before the news happens, you should try, I think, and I could be wrong, it doesn't work in every case, you should try to sell. So Bernard Baruch is a famous investor from the early 1900s. There's a college named after him in New York City. He was a scumbag like everyone else. He did, this was when insider trading was legal. So he would find out, he would get a telegraph what the price of gold was in London and what the price of gold was in New York. And they would often be different because not that many people had telegraphs. And he would all day long trade gold in New York versus gold in London, and that he made over $100 million. He died. John D. Rockefeller said, huh, $100 million. I thought he was rich. But Bernard Baruch said, I always bought too early and sold too soon. And yeah, he made $100 million. So that's also a valuable lesson. Don't be afraid to, don't try to buy at the low or sell at the high. You will mess up if you try to do that. So as an example, like take Bitcoin, and I'll get back to the CCIV in a second. I have no investing strategy with Bitcoin. I simply buy a little more every month. And I tell the person who buys for me, I don't care if it's going up. I don't care if it's going down. I don't care what the price is. I'm not trying to game it. I just want a little bit more Bitcoin in my portfolio. But CCIV, what did happen? When the news happened, because I wasn't following it every day like you were, when the news happened, what happened that day? What did it go from what price to what price, roughly?
It went down like 35%.
Right.
So the day the news came out, the stock basically went from, let's call it 70 to roughly
40,
like in the 40s, and now it's in the 20s. Mm-hmm. So basically, when the rumor was happening, it went from 10 to 60, it went up 500%, and then it caved in half. It caved in by 70%, actually, going all the way from 70 to 24 now after the news. So a couple comments. Here's the good, and we'll talk about a couple different stocks, but these are all basic lessons, and I'll answer questions too, but this could be just a part one. We have 60 minutes, obviously, to do this. So basically, the good thing is, and this was, Peter Lynch discussed this in a famous book he wrote back in, I think, 1989. He was the manager for Fidelity Magellan, the most successful mutual fund at that time. It was very, very successful. And his whole approach was he would basically watch what his wife bought at the mall, and he would buy those stocks. And so, because they really, I don't know what it is, like men don't care about anything. We don't care about quality or what's good or what's bad. But women really do care about buying the best products, and they research products more than men do, and which is why you're more put together and I'm a mess. And I mean, I think this jacket, things are falling off. Like it's like ripped off because I don't. And anyway, you and Rosemary went to the dealership in Miami for Lucid Motors. You talked to the guy, you did a ton of research. You did research about Michael Klein, who not only was running the SPAC, but suspiciously, and I think perhaps illegally, was involved in investing in Lucid, and it just so happens they merged together. But you were an expert, you researched the management team, you researched Lucid, you knew this stuff about the battery, and I do agree, even if electric vehicles aren't a trend, battery power is a huge, exponentially growing a trend, and electric vehicles probably are as well. So you bought what you liked, and that is a great, great strategy. So much better than buying stuff just because you hear about it from somebody, or you think it has a good PE ratio, which is not as important as people think, and blah, blah, blah. You bought it because you like the company.
And plus, I like Lucid because not only it's a great company, but I know how the Saudis work, and they will hire, they have a very deep pocket, so they are going to hire the best of the best. And it's like the best of everything, and they're going to skyrocket.
But they're going to hire better people than Americans will?
Well, there probably are Americans that they're hiring, or whoever, anyone in the world. They're just going to get the best.
And they have essentially infinite money. They're trying to diversify out of oil, which is why they're going into electric vehicles. And here's the thing.
And they love the luxury. The Saudis, the Middle East, they're so into luxury. So anything that they're going to produce is going to be amazing.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Why wouldn't they make a big investment in Tesla then? Tesla's arguably a more luxury car than the Lucid Motors car will be.
No, I think that they have a better battery, actually.
Okay, and they want to make money, so they start their own company using that battery. Okay. So this is something very important, which is not talked about at all in investing, but there's something I call the rule of two. So you didn't have one reason to buy Lucid. You had two or more reasons. Because if one reason doesn't, you want to have more than one story that you like about a company. So you liked the battery story. You liked the electric vehicle story. But you also liked the fact that the Saudi Arabia, which is trying to, you lived in Kuwait and on the border of Saudi Arabia, so you're very familiar with the culture and the decision makers there. You knew people very high up because of your CIA connections, you had three or four stories about why you should buy a stock. The rule of two is very valuable. Let's say you're a writer. So I'm a writer. When I write an article, I use the rule of two. So I try to write an interesting story, but I'll also have maybe unique, interesting information. You want to give people at least two reasons to get into the article and like it and share it. So if they don't like the story, maybe the interesting information is enough for them to like it and come back to future articles I write. Or maybe I do some funny thing in the article that makes them come back. So you always want to give people two reasons to do something that you're engaged in. Or two reasons to buy a stock so that if one story doesn't work out, like let's say they decide to focus on batteries instead of electric vehicles, you still can stay in. Or let's say, with Apple, I might not like Apple iPhones, but I do. But I might like the fact that iTunes is the biggest, music distributor on the planet. Or Amazon. I might not like a little bookstore run by a little guy named Jeff Bezos, but I might like the fact that they control all the storage. They're the biggest cyber storage company in the world. So there's multiple reasons to get into a story. If you don't have the rule of two working for you, I think there's too much risk. And this works, by the way, in investing, it works in writing, and by the way, it works in war. If you only are invading on one front, then the defender can put all their defenses and protect that one front. But if you're invading on two fronts, they can't protect. The way to win any war, and you just look at World War II as a great example, and the lack of two fronts in Vietnam and Korea, but you look at like World War II, there were many fronts. There was France and Germany. There was North Africa. There was Japan. There was Russia going into Japan. There was us going from the Pacific into Japan. So there was multiple fronts, and it's hard for a smaller country they can defend one front, but not two fronts. So this is a very powerful thing to understand. In chess, you could maybe somebody's weak on the king, but they could throw all their pieces and defend. But if they're weak on the king and on the queen side, they can't defend both, and you can attack both. It's harder to defend than to attack. It's better to have the initiative. So you had what I would call the initiative, the rule of two on Lucid. But here's one thing that always bothered me when we would talk. I would ask you, what is the market capitalization? You would say something's expensive if it was $500 a share, and something's cheap if it's $10 a share. And to some extent, that's true. But if I asked you, what was the full market capitalization? What is this company worth? Because you're an owner of the company. When you own a share, you should know how much it's worth. Sometimes you wouldn't know the answer because you were just relying on the price is cheap or low. But if you own something, if I own a house, it might be the best house in the world, but if a house is worth $1 billion, nobody should buy it. It's too expensive. If a house is worth, if a 5,000 square foot house in New York City is worth $100,000, then that's almost too cheap. You should ask what's wrong with it. So knowing the full value of something is extremely important. I find a lot of investors, not just you, but I find most investors don't take the time. They look at price and they determine if it's cheap based on the price, but they don't look at the market capitalization and determine if it's cheap or good that way. Another technique, which I think you did use on CCIV, but I only use this technique, is who else is invested in this? Because my mantra every morning is I wake up and say, I'm probably the stupidest person I know. And so if I make a decision, I like to know that there are other smart people who are making this decision alongside of me, people smarter than me. So let's say, for as an example, I look at CCIV and I don't know anything about it. And I'm like, I don't know anything about batteries. What do I know? And then I see, oh my gosh, Warren Buffett is invested in this. What am I going to do? Am I going to say to Warren Buffett, Warren, what are you doing investing in this? Are you stupid or something? No, he's the smartest. He's been doing investing for 70 years. He's the smartest investor ever. So I, without any questions asked, I will buy any stock Warren Buffett owns. And I've made my living for the past 13 years from investing. And I learned the only real thing I care about is who else is invested and are they smarter than me? Because if Warren Buffett is invested, or if Carl Icahn or if Peter Thiel, of all these people, they do much better research than I do. And they're much more experienced and they're much smarter. So if they make the decision and I can invest in the same way at the same terms they do, then that's strong consideration for me. If I say to myself, well, I'm glad no one else knows about this stock because for some reason nobody else is invested in it, I get to invest in it first. You always have to ask, why are you, out of 6 billion people, magically getting this chance to invest and not Warren Buffett? Like, who wakes up? Nobody wakes up and says, I'm going to make James Altucher rich today. So if someone calls me and says, James, I got this great stock for you. No one's in it. I'm like, why isn't Warren Buffett in it? Ah, he's an idiot. He's not. But you have the chance to be in it. And then maybe Warren Buffett will go in. It doesn't work that way. That's not the order of things. So you want to go in the correct order of things. So this piggyback technique is very valuable. But you notice some smart investors were in CCIV. Like, who was in CCIV?
A lot of the hedge funds, most of them.
So yeah. A lot of big hedge funds were in it. Mm-hmm. And they're not short-term thinkers, right? So they're not selling on the news. You're right. Lucid Motors probably will be at some point. I think the deal was valued at about $20 billion. And I think Lucid Motors, and Tesla, meanwhile, is worth what? Like $800 billion? So if Lucid does become a valid competitor to Tesla, then I think you're right. Whether or not you got nervous, did you get nervous when it went from 68 to 22? Did you get a little upset?
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't get upset, but I mean, because I already had skimmed off, you know, my profit or my base investment. But it's hard to lose, even if it's just the money that you collected from the stock. Yeah.
I did get a little
bit. Yeah, so, because we were so excited. Like, it was such an adrenaline rush every day for, like, I don't know, for a long time. Like, but then it got old because you're just like, you know, what's going to happen? So,
that's the one thing with buying on the rumors, selling on the news, is that if the rumors were false, it also would have collapsed. And
so, like, when you're investing in SPACs, which is something that I started to do, which are pretty cool, and something you taught me too, is when you do look at SPACs, because there's over 500 of them, you know, finding a good one. And it's, you always told me that you look for the management team and the people, you know, behind it. So that's what I've done. And it's easy to do that, you know, if you have to do your due diligence on that.
I have to say, Airbnb has changed my life. I just love staying in Airbnbs. Like in about a month, I'm going to Cocoa Beach, which is right next to Cape Canaveral. I'm going to watch some rocket launches. I'm going to, of course, be staying in a very nice Airbnb on the beach. And it's just such a great experience. Like the whole world is available to us now because of Airbnb. But whenever I'm at an Airbnb, I always realize, you know, the home that I left to come to this Airbnb, I could be making money on that right now by hosting and being an Airbnb myself. So, and I've known people, I had a friend who basically, you know, made a living from turning his home into an Airbnb. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, you do have an Airbnb there. And it can easily fit into your lifestyle, and it's a great way to earn some money. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours. And they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop. Really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle. because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your crave.
I'm going to tell a sad story. I mean, I was once on the board of directors of a public company that was in the staffing space. We had $1 billion in revenues. And when I joined the board, the stock went from 43 cents to like $6 or $7. And I had like $9 million worth of stock. But I didn't do enough research on the management team. And in particular, the chairman or the largest shareholder was this guy named Robert. And then one day I got a call, the board meeting in 20 minutes. And I thought, okay, this is a great company. Maybe I'm about to get rich. Like the company's going to get sold. And we get on the board and John, the CEO, said, I have some news. The bank is on their way over here to throw us out of our offices, take over the company, divide it up, and sell it for nothing to its customers who are also in the same industry. Because Robert, the largest shareholder, owed $90 million to the IRS, and that broke the debt agreement with the bank. And so the bank had the right, they didn't have the obligation, they had the right to take over the company. We actually could have paid back the bank, but they decided, we're gonna make much more money if we just screw you guys, which was their right to do. And so in a matter of minutes, I lost $9 million. And I remember I was on the set of the TV show Billions, ironically, which is about hedge funds winning and losing money. And I was stuck out there in the middle of New Jersey, and I was like about to cry because I was essentially losing all my money. It was another time I went broke, but I survived it, and I decided to stay for the rest of the day. Nobody could even tell I just lost like all my money because I didn't do enough research on this idiot who owed $90 million in taxes. And somehow I didn't know that was part of the debt agreements. This is what happens when I make decisions on my own. So I wish someone else had made the decision with me. But so this is all like kind of investing 101. But the important thing is know the market capitalization, know who else is invested, buy the rumor, sell the news. But look, even though the stock has collapsed, not collapsed, but it's gone down a lot, you have the rule of two. So yes, the news didn't spike it to 300 like maybe you thought it would, but the story is still intact. So when I own a stock, I only own a few stocks. When I own a stock, the only time I sell is what I call a story stop. I haven't heard this term used anywhere else. Many people have what's called a price stop. Like if they buy a stock at 20 and it goes down to 15, they'll sell so they don't lose any more money. But I've tested this out with software. It turns out many stocks will hit a price stop and then go up from, they'll go from 20 to 15, they'll sell, and then it'll go up to 70 or whatever. So you make more money when you don't have price stops, but you have story stops. So what's a story stop? Well, if suddenly they switched out of the electric vehicles and battery business, I would get out of the stock because I don't know what they're doing now or why did they do this. Or if the CFO suddenly leaves and there's no explanation, or the CEO, that's something to be suspicious about, and that's a story stop. If the story changes, that's when you get out, not because the price changes. Smart investors don't leave a stock just because the price goes down. That is a very stupid strategy. You should always stick in with as long as the story's intact. Because in the long run, if Lucid truly is making a better car than Tesla, then guess what? Tesla's buying this for $100 a share at some point. Right. Probably won't go by itself to 600, but it'll be bought by Tesla or some other car company for a much higher price than now. I'm not recommending this stock, by the way. I'm going along with your story. If your story plays out, then that's what should happen.
Another thing I like about it is that it is a battery company, first off, you know. And I know that what's happening, even with Tesla, they're putting in battery units in some of the grids, our electric grids in the States.
Yeah.
So I think that that will also, with Lucid having the battery that it has, maybe will generate, you know, something like that.
Yeah, so that's the great thing. Like, if electric vehicles don't work out, the battery business, by the way, has been an exponentially growing business for at least 30 years. And industry, I mean. And so another good technique, what are the industries that are growing exponentially? And let me give you an example. In 1966, Gordon Moore, who was the CEO of a tiny little company at that time called Intel, he predicted that computer power would double every 18 months. That means it's exponentially growing. I mean, computers now are like a billion times more powerful than the little calculator that powered the Apollo 11 to the moon. I mean, computers can calculate a trillion calculations a second. Back then, it was measured in the thousands. So here's a strategy. If you had bought the first 100 computer companies that went public, and let's say you used $1,000 for each one. So you spent $100,000 to buy the first 100 computer companies that went public. Let's say, for just argument's sake, that 98 out of the 100 computer companies went bankrupt almost instantly, but two survived, Intel and Microsoft. You would have lost $98,000 out of $100,000 and only be left with the $2,000 that you put into Intel and Microsoft. Well, let's say you held on to them. Because of the exponential growth, guess how much money you would have made on overall? On that $100,000 you invested, where again, 98 companies went bankrupt, you would have made $3.5 million just because of Intel and Microsoft. The benefit of knowing that is that exponentially growing companies are better to invest in than stable, mature companies that are only growing a little bit by bit every year. So yes, Exxon, for example, has almost a 5% dividend. And if you like your dividends, it's a fine company, but it's never gonna grow exponentially. Every exponential industry, you can't predict which companies will fail and which companies will succeed, but you can predict the industry as a whole will make you an enormous amount of money if you just spread the money out, very small amounts. Don't put money in like this is your only chance to win the lottery and you better take it. You will have many chances. There are going to be many exponential industries over the next 30 years. Peter Diamandis, who's been on my podcast, wrote a book that not only about exponentially growing industries, but how these industries are being created faster than ever because of the effects of other exponentially growing industries. So here are some industries that are still growing exponentially. First off, computers, and related to that, computer storage and big data and AI and robotics and drones, but also in a completely different area, genomics is growing exponentially, batteries is growing exponentially, and there's a bunch of other industries, happy to talk about at some other point, maybe we'll do another IG Live about that, but bet on the exponentially growing industries, but don't put all your bets on one company. That in a weird way, trying to make $1 billion or $1 million on one company is oddly a scarcity way of thinking. You're so afraid you're not gonna have another chance that you put all your money in this one investment, hoping to make it big, and that's a very risky way to invest. Better is to have an abundance mindset. So when it comes to investing, an abundance mindset means you're gonna have many opportunities in life. You don't have to take each one. You don't really know which ones are the winners, but you did your research, so you know which industries are growing, and there's gonna be opportunities in the future, so don't worry. Like a lot of people say to me, oh, I missed my chance to start an internet company. I missed my chance to start a biotech company. You've never missed your chance. If you have an abundance mindset, you'll have, and you write 10 ideas a day and exercise the idea muscle, you will have more opportunities than you ever thought possible. But the key is not to invest a lot. The way to win the game is to stay in the game. Keeping position sizes small, researching what's exponential, looking at where Warren Buffett and other great investors invest, you know, buying the rumor, selling the news, understanding market capitalization, dealing with the psychology of losing a lot of money by having story stops and using stories to guide your investing. These are all good basic techniques for investing. Now, what's another stock that you own?
Well, one of my favorites is IIPR. And so that's a REIT, and it's in the marijuana cannabis industry. But they have a great, I've made a lot of money off of that one.
So IIPR, just to explain, she's invested in it. It's, and we're not recommending any of these things, by the way. So, hey, Esther. How are you doing? Esther Q on the podcast. She's a great comedian. Everybody say hi to Esther and go to her comedy shows that she promotes. So good to see you, Esther. So, IAPR, Robin is just obsessed with marijuana. I cannot believe how obsessed she is with marijuana. I mean, all day long, it's like she drinks it, smokes it, eats it, and takes an IV of marijuana. She's an addict. And they say you can't be addicted to marijuana, but I've seen her in action. She would give a blowjob in the street for marijuana.
That's terrible.
She wouldn't. Believe me, I've tried. Cannabis, because it's being legalized everywhere, it was legalizing. This is how we met. Our first dinner was you got nervous because Canada had just legalized cannabis, and mm-hmm. because of Buy the Rumor, Sell the News, you didn't understand why all the Canadian cannabis stocks were going down.
No, I just didn't know what to do.
You didn't know what to do. Fair enough. So, but the reality is, state by state, marijuana is getting legal, and it's starting to be used for not only recreational use, but medical use. Even further, it's starting to be used for pharmaceutical use, which is slightly different than medical use in that you have to do experiments and have clinical trials. You can never do clinical trials on marijuana because it was illegal. So now they're starting. By the way, have you noticed since COVID, it used to be big pharma was evil. Now we're like waiting online like 20 times around the block to get the Pfizer vaccine. When did big pharma suddenly become our best friend? Another story. But she's invested in a company called IIPR, which is a real estate investment trust. It's a REIT. They have to distribute 95% of their profits as a dividend. That's the nature of a REIT. And they, on all the real estate that they own, they grow, they sell it or rent it to people who are growing marijuana. So
long-term leases. Yeah.
Long-term leases. So it benefits from, you don't have to be in, they're not in the marijuana industry specifically, but all the people in the marijuana industry use them. So there's two stories. They benefit from the growth of marijuana, but they also benefit from the growth of the real estate, the value of the real estate that they own. And I don't know how many acres they own, perhaps you do, but that's a decent business model. Is it a risky stock? Of course. So that's why, and even in the cannabis industry, there's 100 or so stocks. I personally would spread it around. I would also focus on the stocks in the cannabis industry that are owned by great investors and hedge funds. Not that that means anything, as we saw by GameStop, but
it's definitely the most stable one, I think, in that.
Yeah, and IIPR has done well. The only thing I would want to know is who's invested in it and what is the overall market capitalization of it, meaning am I buying it too expensively or am I buying it too cheaply? Because then maybe you could sell. If it's worth $1 trillion in the market, it's probably not worth that in reality. I would sell it. But the other thing is, I would ask, is how many acres do they have? What's the value per acre? How much of their acres are rented? I do remember vaguely there was a headline, somebody wrote a short report on it, but that doesn't mean anything. I would just want to read that report. And, you know, what's the background of the CEO and the management team in managing other REITs? Were they successful? If cannabis suddenly becomes illegal, what are the risks? Here's the thing that's very important to know about any activity, whether it's writing, investing, comedy, entrepreneurship. We all know the rewards are there. The rewards are there in investing. Otherwise, people like Warren Buffett wouldn't exist. He's made all his money over 70 years from investing. I just read an article 20 minutes ago. He just passed the $100 billion club. That's a club now. It used to be the $1 billion club. Now it's the $100 billion club. Soon it's going to be the $1 trillion club, maybe. That's the club. No, if a club will have me as a member, I don't want to join. So you can't give me $1 trillion to join your stupid club, $1 trillion club. So who is Warren Buffett invested? I forgot before I made that joke. I completely forgot what I was talking about.
Another one that I like is Beyond.
Beyond Meats, because again, a fast growing. Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google, when I asked him, what are the 5 biggest trends over the next 10 years? You would think this guy would say drones to kill people, or big data to spy on people, or AI to create a Terminator to kill people. Like, that's what I was thinking he would answer. But you know what he said? The biggest trend of the next 10 years, he said, would be plant-based foods. And that's another area that's growing exponentially. Mm-hmm. So you bought Beyond Meats, but furthermore, you like the Beyond Meats hamburger, the Beyond right. Burger, right?
Right.
Would you prefer a Beyond Burger over a regular hamburger?
Sure.
And not only that, you like the stem cell grown meats, like Memphis
right.
Meats.
Like Memphis Meats, which is a private right now, but there's a company, MTTCF, that's going to be going on NASDAQ this week or next week, that's an Israeli company. And they 3D print meat from stem cells.
So it's like two
so
stories.
It's like Memphis Meats, but it's a different company. And there you can get in. I always love Memphis Meats, but it's private.
So what I love about this stock you're talking about in Israel that's going public here is there's three stories. It's the plant-based food story, because it's not coming from cows or chicken or whatever.
But
it's a 3D printing story, which is also
excellent. But it's not plant-based.
I understand, but it's non-meat-based,
right.
Even though it is meat.
Yeah.
And it's genomics.
Right.
It's in the genomics industry because of they're taking these stem cells from, I don't know, baby cows or whatever, and turning them into real meat.
Right. You don't have to have slaughter, which is great. You don't, you know, it's just, I think the whole thing is great because then with global warming, you don't have the problem with, you know, cows.
So I would say like your best qualities as an investor is you buy the story, not like some PE ratio or some stupid ratio or number that other people, there's all these books about Warren Buffett that are so wrong that he made his money by buying stocks that have high earnings but low market. This is all BS. You buy a good story. When you buy a single share of stock, you own a piece of that company. Mm-hmm. So you have to believe in the company. When I bought into a comedy club, did I believe in that company? Absolutely not. A comedy club is the worst investment on the planet. I should never have done it. But I did like comedy. But I didn't believe in the business. But now they're doing a good job. I shouldn't criticize the business. And so you have to believe in the story, and you have to be excited about it, and it has to be something you're personally interested in and that you think is going to be valuable going forward. So I think that's a good approach. And it's almost always, I don't know if you plan it this way, but it's almost always magically in an exponentially growing industry. But I tell you all the time about genomics. You don't really get into it because it's hard to understand genomics. It's hard to get excited about.
Well, I love it, and I really think it's going to happen, but I'm putting my money in these things that are happening right now.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does.
I could buy it, and it's going to sit there for several years, but I'd rather take the money and use it right now.
Right.
Really hot,
because,
and then I can switch it over to...
Because here's the thing about exponentially growing industries. They're valued very tiny, almost close to zero for a long period of time, and then suddenly the exponential stuff kicks in and they value a lot. Intel in 1966, when Gordon Moore predicted the exponential growth of the computer industry, I think the entire market capitalization of Intel was about $3 million. Of course, now it's almost a trillion, so that's the benefits of exponential growth. But any industry that's exponential is gonna start up really tiny for a very long time. And then it's like a learning curve. It goes like this, and then it starts to plateau. So we talked about learning curves when we talked about the growth of a pandemic back in last April, because pandemics operate very much like the mathematics of a learning curve or an exponentially growing industry. So, and I read an article actually that computing power has been increasing every 18 months for about 2,000 years. So there was the abacus, and there was different ways of calculating math, and it just everything kept improving. So these trends have been trends for a much longer period of time. Like our understanding of medicine, speaking of genomics, our understanding of medicine has increased exponentially in the past 100 years, 200 years, 1,000 years. You know, it was only in the 1800s that they figured out that washing hands helps prevent disease. Mm-hmm. So Ignaz Semmelweis worked in a medical facility, I believe in Germany, in the 1830s, and an unusually high amount of women were dying in childbirth more than any other medical facility. Why were these people dying in childbirth? It turns out, so he would follow the doctors around, and it turns out they had older patients also, as well as young women. And the older patients were often dying because they were bleeding them to death. And they would go from the morgue straight to delivering a baby in the birth center. And then the woman would die mysteriously. So Ignaz Semmelweis put two and two together and realized, oh, they're not washing their hands. You need to wash your hands, but when you go from touching a dead body to going and delivering a baby. I didn't get gross there. And I could have. But here's the thing. It's not good enough. This is why the rule of two is important. It's not good enough to be good, have a skill at something. You need one other component. So Ignaz Semmelweis, who basically discovered germ theory and figured out this thing about washing hands, he didn't have the rule of two going for him. He didn't know how to persuade people that what he was saying was correct. So he was not a nice person, apparently. Everyone hated him. And so not only did they not believe him, they put him in a mental institution, and he ultimately died insane and penniless because he was so frustrated nobody believed in him. So if you have a skill, it's not good enough. You're not going to be the best in the world. You need to have skills that make you good in an industry, like persuasion skills, things like that. This is very important. The rule of two is valuable in everything you do. What else was I going to say about, you know, this is why also it's important. It's not good enough to be just a little bit better than someone else. Like we all, for young people who might not remember, we used to watch movies on something called VHS tapes, but there was another technology that was better than VHS tapes. It was the Sony Betamax. Was better than VHS. It was higher quality video. But the average person, like I was a kid, I couldn't tell the difference between that Betamax was 10% better than VHS. Maybe Betamax should have had a faster fast forward or rewind or some other feature that would give it the rule of two, and then I would have preferred Betamax over VHS. Instead, I didn't care, and Betamax was a failure for Sony. By the way, do you know what the most profitable division of Sony America is? This is just some trivia. I just found this out a few months ago. The Game Show Network. They really? Play old game shows of Jeopardy and Family
like
Feud.
Watching.
And that is the most profitable division of Sony
really?
America. Yeah.
Wow.
A little bit of business trivia. So I think this is the basic investing masterclass of the day. We'll do more of these, and also I'll collect questions from Jay. Maybe did Jay email you? Can you check your phone? He might have emailed you. But I also want to mention something about, crypto and the economy, but maybe I'll do that at the next IG Live. But so we'll do another IG Live, I think either tomorrow or Monday. Let's assume tomorrow I'll do another IG Live. Check on Twitter or my Facebook for the time, and I'll talk about crypto, I'll talk about the economy, I'll talk about the overall stock market. And I've been doing investing in particular, because I think retail now is going back full force for the first time since 1999 into investing. This is an area where I've done it professionally, meaning I invested other people's money for 20 years or more, 21 years now. And I didn't always do such a good job at it. I didn't do a bad job at it. I make my living from private investing now, but maybe it's a different perspective. I appreciate Robin's perspective, kind of the retail investor perspective, and I learn from it, and the value of story stocks and telling a good story. But I also figure I can correct, it's like a plane that's in the air, and every now and then you have to correct course. But the other thing I wanted to just quickly talk about before this ends, because it's going to end soon, the countdown has begun, is, by the way, thank you everyone for tuning in. I really appreciate this, particularly Esther, who asked me to go on her comedy show, so thank you, and Jay as well. But I wrote this book, Skip the Line. Don't buy it. I'm not trying to sell it. I'm saying don't buy it because I hate selling things. But I did say that I wanted to test out the techniques in Skip the Line. I wanted to prove that this works. So these were all techniques I've used personally to skip the line. I've switched careers 5 or 6 times, maybe because I'm a dilettante, or maybe because I just, my interests and passions change, and I believe you should always do what you're passionate about. But I stated after the book came out, I will offer, if you write like a review on Amazon or prove that you've read the book, I will set up a 12-person mentorship program called I Will Make You a Millionaire. I originally pitched this as a TV show, but I decided now to do this. It'd be more fun for me, honestly, to do this as a one-on-one mentorship program and not under the, where they're trying to create fights, fist fights in reality TV and love affairs and all this kind of stuff. So I'm kind of more or less randomly picking people to be part of this program, but also I'm going to document everything that we do. So even if you're not one of the 12 people that I select for this, I will be selecting again every once in a while, maybe 6 months from now, maybe 12 months from now. And B, I will document everything. So even if you don't benefit, even if you're not in the mentorship program directly, you'll see and hear everything I'm doing to help the other people and how I'm using the techniques of the book Skip the Line to help other people. And so the first, on each one of these IG Lives, I'll announce a different person that I've selected for the mentorship program. And the first person is a guy, James Quandal. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. James, I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your last name. It's spelled Quandhal, something like that. And we've been emailing. Also, I very much appreciate, James, that you wrote an unbelievably fantastic review on Amazon for the book. Thank you so much. It blew me away. I really appreciate it. And also, I've been using the techniques in this book for a very simple experiment. I used to be very strong at chess. Now, I still am, but when you don't study something for 23 years, you slip. I'm maybe about half as good as I used to be. And so I'm using the techniques in Skip the Line there's 23 different techniques in this book. I'm using the techniques to get just as good as I was at chess at my peak in 1997, and even better. And so far, so good. I'm probably right now as good as I was, but now I need to be better, so the hard work starts. But it only took me about 3 months to use these techniques to get back to where I was at my peak, more or less. And James, I noticed him. He was on in order to benchmark my progress, I stream myself playing chess on Twitch sometimes every couple of days. Today I solve problems on Twitch. I tried to solve as many problems as I could in 3 minutes. I solved 35 problems in 3 minutes. And James has been providing some valuable comments on Twitch as well as doing a review. So James, we'll start the mentorship off next week. I'm looking forward to talking with you about it. This is probably the first time you're hearing that you're part of this. So you could also say no. Maybe you're going to say screw that. I'm not going to be in your mentorship program. I got more important things going on. So that's fine. You could say that. But tomorrow or when we do this IG Live again, I'll talk a little bit more about what's happening in the news. We just passed a stimulus bill. By the way, I saw a quote right before the election on November 4th. On November 3rd, Joe Biden said, he tweeted, "Everybody, just stay in line, please. No, skip the line." And so I'll talk a little bit more about how I'm running for president. Not that I announced. I went to the Federal Elections Commission's website, fec.gov, and I filled out some paperwork. And you all should do this, too. I encourage you all to do this. I filed to run for president of the United States in 2024. I'm probably not serious about it, but it makes me think about the issues in a different way. And it allows me to state how I feel about the political system, which is that we need more than two parties instead of just choosing between two 70-year-old alleged rapists. Like, it's not good enough to just vote for the lesser of two evils. You got to vote for something good. One more piece of trivia. Everybody kept telling me, well, I didn't vote this election. And everyone kept telling me, you don't have a right to speak if you don't vote. Well, now I have a right because I'm running for president. But the other thing is, if people would say to me, this is the most important election ever. So I went on newspapers.com, which is a search engine for newspapers dating back 300 years. And I searched for the phrase most important election ever. It turns out, actually, the year 1800, it was John Adams versus Thomas Jefferson. That was the most important election ever. And 1804, 1808, 1812, 1816, 1820, 24, 30, all the way through 1964, 1968, 1980, 1984, 1992. Every single election has been the most important election ever. There's a bubble of most important elections ever. And which reminds me, somebody just asked, doesn't this stock market seem like a bubble? I will address that tomorrow, because the answer is no, and I'll explain why very specifically what's happening. So thanks so much for tuning into this IG Live. This is going to be put up on the podcast as quickly as possible as well. Tomorrow I'll spend a little bit more time, we'll both spend a little bit more time answering questions, including the types of things we argue about. I know everyone's interested in that. And thanks so much for tuning into the IG Live. Jay, I hope you've been recording this because I forgot to. And see you all tomorrow or the next day. Thanks very much. Thank Bye.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.